Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
That's right. Hey, everybody, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Karen Frazier, and tonight we have a new and improved Rick Hale. That's right, we southernified him and we've chickified him, sitting in Teresa West.
Hello, Karen.
The new improved Rick.
The new and improved Rick Hale. I think I like that.
So how are you doing, Teresa? Thank you for stepping in.
You know, I am just great. Actually, I couldn't be any better if I tried, and you're very welcome.
Okay, see there, it's all good. So tonight we have a really good show. We are going to be talking to Shane Harris and Elaine Davison. Elaine is with Western Oregon Organization of Paranormal Investigation, or Investigators, I never remember which, whoopee! And Shane Harris has started the Sarah Harris Foundation. Shane's wife died from some contamination she received during a paranormal investigation. Tonight we're going to be talking about paranormal safety, and we're all going to try to get through it without crying, because other than Shane, there's a bunch of chicks on the line.
It's going to be hard.
That's right. That's right. So in the meantime, a couple things coming up that I wanted to mention. The weekend of March 8th, I am going to be speaking at the Oregon Ghost Conference. Cheryl was wishing against all wishes she could come, because it is one of the best, most entertaining ghost conferences out there. We have a really good time. And so it's the weekend of March 8th, 9th, and 10th in Oregon City, Oregon at the Pioneer Center. And if you're in the neighborhood, stop on by, because it's a lot of fun. Let's see, what else, Cheryl? Do we have any announcements? We have a February issue coming up in a day or two.
We do. It actually should be ready to go tomorrow. The February issue features Ben Hansen on the cover. You might know him from the TV show Fact or Faked, Paranormal Files.
Wait a minute. Yes. A February issue is coming out on February 1st.
Can you believe that? It's
Cheryl,
a miracle.
Cheryl and Paranormal Underground have turned over a new leaf.
We've turned over a new leaf. We're going to be on time all year long, meaning the first, or at least the second of each month, the issue will go online for everybody to check out. Yeah. So we're excited about that. And also, we have some really great shows coming up. This month we have, February actually. We have Deb Lance, who you might know.
Oh, I'm sorry, would you say who it is again? Teresa laughed and I missed it.
February 7th we have Deb Lance, psychic medium, paranormal investigator, and author of True Hauntings. Okay. February 14th, you don't want to do anything on Valentine's Day, you just want to listen to Paranormal Underground, because we are going to be talking to Stanton Friedman.
Friedman, as Mr. UFO himself.
UFO guy, yeah. And you've probably seen him on TV somewhere as an expert.
Stanton Friedman. You know, here's one of the most interesting things about Stanton Friedman that a lot of people don't know. I've interviewed Stan a few times. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize Stanton Friedman is the reason that Roswell is Roswell. Mm-hmm. Roswell was just going to go down in history as a weather balloon accident until in the 1970s, when Stanton Friedman got a whiff of it, and that's why Roswell is the big deal it is now. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he like one of the really very first guests on the podcast?
He was the very first guest we ever had.
He was the first guest.
Yeah,
and that's how many years ago?
Interrupt you. Go on, Cheryl.
Oh yeah, no, I'm excited to listen to you guys interview him anyway. And then we have February 21st, Duncan Lunan. If you go to childrenfromthesky.com, you can find out about his research. And Rick seemed to know a lot about the case. Unfortunately, I don't. I just know it sounded interesting, and so we get to talk to him about that. Hopefully, we'll come up to speed before he gets there, but it sounded like Rick was an expert on the children from the sky.
I hope he doesn't freak me out.
Like the, what was that show we did?
The Black Eyed
Kids. Yeah, that was...
The Black Eyed Kids is freaky. And so whenever I hear anything paranormal and they say children something, I'm like...
Think of the Black Eyed Kids. Yeah. So yeah, lots of good stuff coming up. Our listeners can go to paranormalunderground.net and check out what we have going on, including the magazine, radio show schedule, upcoming. And then if they want to contribute on the forum, we have that too.
There you go.
Yay.
It's a plethora of paranormal pleasure. Oh my God, write that down.
Wow, that's new. Okay. Rick's going to be sad he missed that one.
Well, that was really good.
Plethora of paranormal.
She's writing it down.
Pleasure.
It's the new tagline.
Okay, I got it. I did write it down, actually.
Rick's usually the alliterative one, but I've been feeling remarkably creative lately. I've sort of been on a roll the last couple days as far as just, very creative.
Creative, that's awesome. I love it when that happens.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. You know, usually I'm just old and tired, but occasionally creative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Woo. So, Teresa, anything new and exciting in your world?
No.
All right. Thank you. That's our show for the evening. All right.
We've had snow or ice every Friday now for the last 3 weeks, and looking
for
more.
Is that unusual?
It is for it to come every Thursday night. Yeah, it's kind of funky.
Yeah, because it doesn't always snow in Tennessee, does it, Teresa?
No, not lately.
Okay.
It's been quite a few years. Like, we had 8 inches of snow in April 1 year.
Wow.
So,
wow.
But, and then, of course, you know, 20 years ago in March, we had what they call the blizzard of 93. It was the middle of March, and we had 6 feet of snow.
Whoa. Holy cow!
Yeah, well, drifting, you know, but it iced over. We had basically martial law. They said if you get out on the roads, we'll arrest you. Of course, I wanted to know how the cops got out too. But
seriously,
wow.
But well, so basically, you know, it's nothing new.
Okay, well, you know, we live on a hill, and our driveway is this kind of windy, twisty thing. And when it snows, I refuse to leave our house because the steepest part of the driveway is also a hairpin turn, and if you go sliding off, you could land on the neighbor's roof, right?
That's not good.
And so I have refused for years when it snows to go down the driveway. Well, one day while Tanner was at school a couple weeks ago, it started snowing during the day, and I texted Tanner and I said, you need to walk home. And he talked one of his friends into driving him home up the driveway. And so I'm sitting in the living room doing something, and I hear the doorbell ringing frantically. Ding dong, ding dong, ding. Well, Tanner does that because he's a teenager, and, you know, so I take my time getting to the doorway thinking, get out your damn key, kid. And I open the door, and Tanner's on the phone, and he's panicked. Jenna slid off the driveway!
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I told him later, that's why you don't ring the doorbell frantically. It's like the little boy who cried wolf.
Yeah. Was she okay, by the way?
She was actually fine. Okay. She stopped before her car hit a tree, and there was no damage to the car. We had a tow truck up. It pulled her right off. But, you know, everybody has laughed at me for years that I won't drive down that driveway in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
There you have it.
There you have it.
That's
point proven.
A couple of years ago when we lived, Chad will like this reference, up on Nebo Mountain, we had a double hairpin to get to our house, and I had asked Wade to drive me to work that afternoon in the truck. So I got off at 10 o'clock. It's snowing like a banshee, and I'm bound and determined. The highway, after we passed one landmark, even the four-lane highway wasn't salted. I'm not stopping. I'm going home. And I got almost to the top, to the first curve, and the cars started sliding off towards the edge of the road. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to stop here and go find a nice way to meet my neighbors. So when Wade finally got out to come and get me, he started sliding down towards the car. And I'm like, the neighbor's kid's out in the road. And I'm like, get out of the road.
Oh, my gosh.
You got 4 tons of steel barreling towards you uncontrollably. But I was bound and determined I was getting home.
Oh, yeah.
All the way going, I told that SOB to take me to work.
That's right. Cheryl, you can tell Chad I saw what he put in the chat room.
I thought you might.
And I will remember.
Okay. Chad, Sharon's going to remember.
The story is women shouldn't drive. Don't let women drive, I believe is what he said. Oh, no, don't let women drive in the snow.
Hey, Karen, guess what, though? Guess what I get to ask Chad all the time? I ask Chad, did you get 100% on your driving test when you took it? And you know what he says? No. And you know what I say? I did.
I wish I was better than my husband at something so that, you know, I could do that. I am better at him than him at a lot of things. What I really wish is that he realized I was better than him.
Convince him of the fact.
It's not going to happen. He knows it. Oh, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I'll keep him away. So let's do this. Let's go to break. Get Shane and Elaine on the line. And when we come back, we are going to take things in a rather serious direction. So stick around. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American news and politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. I am Karen Fraser. She is the new Rick Hale, Teresa West.
That's me.
So we have our guests on the line, and I wanted to introduce them to you. The concept for the Sarah Harris Foundation was created in November 2012 by Shane Harris after he lost his wife, Sarah, to a 28-day battle against some unknown virus or bacteria that affected her lungs. The foundation itself was founded and organized in January 2013 when Shane began putting the concept on paper and enlisting the help of family, friends, and investigators in the field. Shane has been investigating for about 3 years, and he's a technical guy, audio specialist, video specialist, and an equipment maintainer. Also on the line, we have Elaine Davison. Elaine, you're the founder of Whoopi, right?
I'm one of the founders.
Yeah. Elaine is one of the founders of Whoopi. She's a good friend of mine. And when Elaine heard Shane's story and Sarah's story, she realized that there was a need to be filled in the paranormal field, and that was that we needed to start thinking about safety. And so Elaine sprang into action. So Shane and Elaine, you guys rhyme. I just realized that. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio.
Thank you for having me. This is an honor.
Yeah, thank you so much. So Shane, we'll start with you, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell your story and to tell Sarah's story.
Well, like I said, you know, she was fighting this 28-day battle with some unknown that pretty much just attacked her lungs to the point that they couldn't sustain life anymore. I mean, she spent 16 days in one hospital, moved to UNC Chapel Hill in another hospital, was on an ECMO machine for 11 days, which is like a lung bypass machine, which pretty much just pulls the blood out of the body, oxygenates it, puts it back in. It's like dialysis, but it's strictly for oxygen. just to give her lungs a chance to rest and try to heal themselves. The ECMO machine really isn't a, it's not really a cure. It just prolongs her life so they can find out what's going on and try to fix it. But they never found out what really happened to her. They just know that she had pneumonia-like symptoms. It went into adult respiratory distress. And then from there, she had diffused alveoli in both of her lungs. And that was pretty much it. I mean, basically she couldn't breathe anymore on her own. And so,
go ahead, I'm sorry. How did this start? Tell us about the investigation.
This is all my belief.
Okay.
This is nothing set in stone because the autopsy reports have stated that there is no unknown reason. Only thing the autopsy report said was that she had severe lung damage. What causes ARDS? A couple different things. Severe pneumonia, inhaling of a bacteria, fungus, and or a virus can do that. We had an investigation on the 19th of October. It was an abandoned house. We'd been there several times before. Nobody else got sick. Halfway through the investigation, we noticed there was bats in the house, stuff like that. And 10 days after that, I woke up Monday morning, got her daughter off to school, made her a pot of coffee, went in to give her a kiss. Hey, I'm going to work. And she couldn't breathe very well. She was disoriented. She just a high fever. She was running a fever of about 102. So I got her to the hospital. And they admitted her and said it was pneumonia. That was it. So they started treating her, and about 2-3 days later, she wasn't getting any better. So they admitted her into ICU, and then on November the 7th, she was put into a medically induced coma because her O2 stats were falling below 80, between 75 and 80%, which is not good. And then from there, she was moved to Chapel Hill. And then that's pretty much the time where she was put on the ECMO machine. And I feel that this investigation had something to do with it because most bacterias and viruses, they have an incubation period, and that incubation period is anywhere between 8 to 10 days.
Right.
My wife didn't work. She was a housewife. She loved the paranormal. She pretty much spent most of her time evidence review, history, locations, EVPs, stuff like that. That's what she did. You know, so I know she didn't go nowhere. She was here at home. And for the 10-day period to the time I took her to the hospital, she hadn't been nowhere else.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it sounds like it probably was, especially with their bats being bats in the location, because bats, as I understand, Elaine, you might be able to help me with this. Bats are one of the disease carrying animal hazards that paranormal investigators might encounter. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Bats and birds carry about 60 different diseases, about 40 of which will get into your lungs.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Boy, it happened. It happened very quickly, Shane.
Yes, it did, because she was healthy. She was healthy. So within those 10 days, between the time that she was admitted into the hospital on the 29th of October to the time that she passed away on November the 25th, you could just see her just deteriorate.
That must have been really hard.
She went from going into the hospital with pneumonia to dying.
Well, I'm sorry, tell me the time frame. About 6 weeks, you said?
No, from October the 29th, when she was admitted into the hospital, till November the 25th, which is roughly 28 days.
Yeah.
She went in with pneumonia, like symptoms, and then passing away.
Wow.
And I was by her side the whole time. I didn't work for the time she went to the hospital till December 5th. The following Monday is when I went back to work. I stayed by her side the whole time.
No, I'm very sorry for your loss. It's a terrible story.
But it's one that needs to be told. It needs to be told. Everybody needs to know that there's dangers out there. And we all have loved ones that want us to come home and be safe.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to my wife shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It shouldn't have happened. So you started the foundation in Sarah's name. It's called the Sarah Harris Foundation at saraharrisfoundation.org, right? S-A-R-A.
S-A-R-A. That is correct. Mm-hmm.
And tell me a little bit about the foundation and what your mission is.
Our mission for this foundation is to make people aware that there are dangers out there, that there is stuff out there in the air that we breathe that we can't see. That we want to get out there and we want to promote health safety. What to look for when you're going into these abandoned buildings. What to look for in cold, dark, damp areas. How to look for mold. What to carry in your first aid kits. Even if you don't have one, everybody needs to have a first aid kit.
Yep.
I mean, mm-hmm. our main purpose of this foundation is to make people aware that there are dangers out there, physical dangers, that can kill you.
Yes. And I think that that's something that's been really field. You know, I've been in basements of places and seen molds and thought, I can't be down here, and actually walked out and left. And there's a way to protect yourself from those types of things, correct?
There is. An N95 mask. That is the cheapest way to protect yourself.
Is that just one of those little paper, kind of the little, not paper, but like the thick papery masks?
And it's got a little respirator thing on the side, about the size of like a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they're called N95 masks.
Okay, and that, what does that protect you from? Does that protect you from all of it?
It doesn't, it filters. N95 masks are, it's like a big filter. And what it does is it kind of filters the air that we breathe. So you have basically a 98% chance if you do breathe something in that it's going to get filtered.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are the kinds you'll find them in, like Home Depot, Lowe's, big box stores, uh-huh. in the hardware department. People that
Correct.
Work with sheetrock and with like oil based paints.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that my husband's a contractor, so
we have some from when Mount St. Helens was fixed to blow the last time. So
yeah
we have some at our house. So Shane, I want to ask you a really direct and blunt question. Before what happened to Sarah, did you ever consider taking a mask on an investigation? Did that ever cross your mind?
Never crossed my mind at all.
And why would
it? When we go into places, we're not worried about what we breathe in. We're worried about what we're hearing or what we're seeing, or we're paying attention to our meters, making sure we got batteries, making sure our cameras are on the right settings, making sure DVR is working, stuff like that. We don't think about a mask.
Yeah.
When you're looking at your IR system and you're outside or wherever your little command central thing is, and you're like, wow, look at all those orbs, and there's not orbs. That's all that is dust, and it looks like snow.
Yeah, it's all stuff you're breathing in.
That's all stuff you're breathing in. So you can't see it. but you can see it because the IR light reflects off of the dust particles or whatever pathogens are floating around in the air. That's what you're breathing in.
Yeah. Well, and so the other thing is that, you know, you guys were in an abandoned place, but a lot of times we're in people's homes and businesses. Do you think that mm-hmm. we need to, you know, do you remain as vigilant there, or do you lower the level of protection, or, you know, what would you recommend for people going into a known place like a home or a business?
Well, most known, I've been into some pretty known places that people live that were pretty dirty.
You
still have to protect yourself, because if you're in the bathroom and you're doing an EVP session and you set your EVP recorder down on the back of the toilet or on next to the sink or something, you don't know what's been there before you.
Yeah.
You know, because mold lives by toilet bases, by the drains in your sink. You know, mold gets there. So you're just transferring whatever you just set down there to your hand, and now your eye itches, so you scratch your eye, and then you just got it in your eye.
Yep. Right. Around your eyes and your nose.
Right. Your hands transfer everything pretty much to your body.
That's true. So then people should wear gloves, too.
Sure. If you're going into a bathroom, sure, put on a pair of gloves if you want, or just don't touch nothing.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you know, hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
Have plenty of hand sanitizer before you go in and when you get out. Sanitize. It kills 99.9% of all germs. Use it twice, it's 100%. So.
Wow. Well, even washing your hands really is, you know, going to make a difference, isn't it?
Yeah. Wash your hands. Yeah. Antibacterial soap.
Yeah. Yeah, and bring your own towels.
Bring your own towels. Make sure when you get done washing your hands, you turn the water off holding the towel so you're not touching the faucet after you're done cleaning. You know, there is proper hand washing techniques.
Yeah, and it's not the quick dip your hands under the water and, you know.
No, it's not. If anybody has children, ask your child how to wash their hands. They will tell you because they practice it in school every day.
Mm-hmm. Right. We just sort of forget about it as grown up. Sorry, Teresa, go ahead.
That's okay. If you've ever worked with money, I stopped biting my fingernails when I worked at Home Depot.
You know, money is nasty.
Nasty. So that's where I learned to not bite my nails, and we used to like wash with hand sanitizer all day.
Yeah. So, Elaine. You have been working on your safety pamphlet, and I'm sorry, I said you sprang into action when you heard about Sarah, but you were actually already working on it.
I started working on it last year. My team did what we call the Dirty House. And right after the Dirty House last spring, we all got upper respiratory infections. We all got really bad cases of bronchitis. And then, wouldn't you know it, our next investigation was the house we call the Mold House.
Oh.
And it literally had black mold going up the bedroom walls, and these people were living in this environment.
Mm. Gee, I wonder why they were experiencing paranormal activity.
Go figure.
Yeah.
So I have a doctor friend, and I was like on the phone to her going, you know, we just went to this pre-investigation house, and this house got mold everywhere. And she says, okay, calm down. Get some of these N95 masks, and if they don't fit right, tape them around the edges.
That's important too. Go back and say that again, because that's the other thing people need to understand.
If they don't fit properly, take some tape and tape around the edges to make a good seal. Is that good enough, Gary?
Because they have to fit properly or they don't do their job.
No.
Right.
So we went in, we did the investigation, and the house, it should be just very sick. We were fine now. Mm-hmm. And it was because we did the right safety protocol.
Right.
So,
Well, we had a carbon monoxide house. We went into a house where they were claiming to have paranormal experiences, and they had no carbon monoxide detectors, and they had their heat source was a barn stove with no gaskets and no ceiling. You know.
Yeah. I ran across doing this. I did have a carbon monoxide story out of Michigan that, you know, I actually talked to one of the two people involved in it. And in Michigan, they have little root cellars that are like 10 by 15 or something like that. Mm-hmm. The gas-powered stove was in the basement. They started investigating in late afternoon. People had gone down to the, you know, basement, done EVP sessions, done all sorts of stuff. Of course, it was warm then. As night came on, the furnace started kicking on. Well, toward the end of the night, they went down into the basement. The girl and her partner, they started doing an EVP session, and both passed out.
Wow.
Had they not come upstairs, had they, been alone, they'd have been goners. But luckily, the rest of their team was like, they should be up here by now. They should be up here by now. She did need CPR.
Holy cow.
Well, actually, wow. She was not breathing, so yeah, she got CPR. Once they got him up, he was a bigger guy, started breathing on his own.
But, wow. So. And you just don't think of that. I mean, I'm going to be really honest here. I've investigated a lot of places, and I'm really paranoid about, like, rodents and things. I've made no secret here of my fear of rodents, bats, especially flying rodents. So I tend to be very paranoid about that. So I tend to be very mindful of it, but I have never, ever worn a mask on a paranormal investigation.
I have not either.
Well, let me ask you something, Karen. You know, and as little as we want to admit it, the biggest exposure that the paranormal field has is television. Unless there's an area where they've been told there's asbestos, you don't see masks on TV either. No. So a lot of people that are starting up now, you know, or well, this is cool, you know, we're going to go do this. You don't think about things like that.
The only person I've ever seen wear a mask on TV is Zach Bagans.
Oh, that's just what Cheryl just said, yeah.
Yeah, he has respiratory issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he must have, like, asthma or something.
Well, right. In Pennhurst, there were areas that had asbestos, so the ghost hunters team wore masks there. And they actually had, like, full-on respirators.
Yeah. Well, asbestos is one thing, but the other thing people don't think about is I think fiberglass insulation can be really dangerous, too, because if you breathe that in, it can scar your lungs, can it?
Yes.
I got a fiberglass story if you want to hear it.
Yeah, of course I do.
Of course we do.
You're going to get to hear some of these, Karen, at the Oregon Ghost Conference. But
That's right. Elaine will be speaking at the Oregon Ghost Conference on Saturday, the 9th of March. All right, go on. Yeah.
Okay. One of the investigators that I actually talked to when I was writing this pamphlet, and of course I got a hold of him through his doctor originally, they went up into an attic. It was a small attic. The house is old, but it's not ancient old. He said it was built in the 1960s. They knocked around, the insulation a little bit. He wasn't feeling too good, like, the next day. By day four, he was in intensive care with a massive lung issue. They couldn't get it under control. They finally made the call. It was some kind of infection. They couldn't get it under control. They went and took out the bottom part of one of his lungs. When it got sent off to histology to be checked out, what kind of bacteria, whatever is this, they found fragments of fiberglass.
Wow. It can mess you up.
Yeah, fiberglass and asbestos cannot be expelled. The lung tissue can't expel it.
I'll be darned. Ugh. That's horrifying. So, I just glanced in the chat room and I noticed a conversation going on that I think is a good one for us to have. Do you have emergency contacts for your team? Do you know about any possible health issues your team has? Now, I know that health information is really private in this country.
Yes, it is.
And there's a lot of issues surrounding privacy. But how do you make sure that you've got your team's back? So if you have somebody on your team who has asthma and you see something happen, I mean, how can you avoid that and make it safe for anyone to investigate?
Well, one thing you can do is you can go online and you can just print out a simple HIPAA form just saying what you disclose to us will not be shared with anybody else. You know, do you have allergies? Are you allergic to bees? Do you carry an EpiPen? Stuff like that. I mean, just let them know. But usually the people that we investigate with, they're really our good friends and stuff. So we're not going to, you know, put them on blast or anything like that. But we need to know, hey, are you allergic to something? Because if you are and you get into it and you start going into anaphylactic shock or something, we need to know what we need to do. We need to know who your doctor is. We need to know your wife's number or girlfriend or whatever, how we can get a hold of them to say, hey, something's wrong with them. We're taking them to the hospital. You need to get up there.
And you need to have that information with you when you do anything together as a team.
Right, because if you're taking a team member to the hospital, you are not next of kin. So you need to have those forms saying, yes, I give these people to treat me, even though they're not next of kin, because I can't verbally or physically give you permission myself. Because say I fell off a roof or something and I'm unconscious, you know, now I have somebody who can make medical calls for me until somebody gets there.
Right, right. And I think that those are things that we don't think about because, again, what we really want to do is we want to go around and chase ghosts. The problem is we don't want to become them.
Correct.
And so, you know, there are things you need to do. So Elaine has written the pamphlet, and it is complete. I know because I've seen it several times now. And talk about that. Talk about where people can find it, who should have it. Is it downloadable so people can print it out for their teams? Where can people go to hear you talk about it or Shane to hear you talk? Tell me all of that stuff, guys.
Elaine, you may go first.
You're going to make me talk. The pamphlet is actually on the Sarah Harris Foundation's website, which is, Shane, you're going to have to tell me, SarahHarrisFoundation.org. Is that right?
That is correct.
It's okay. Under the safety tab,
safety
right?
Safety tab. And so under all the information tab. Is there. So anybody can get to it right now. Just go out there and click. I will be talking at the Oregon Ghost Conference, and I will be handing out pamphlets there. Shane has in the mail going right to him right now a bunch of pamphlets to start handing those out at his events. So.
And is it okay if people print it out and hand it out themselves?
It says at the bottom of the pamphlet, it says, this pamphlet is copyright free and may be reproduced.
Okay.
Anybody?
That's a good thing because I reproduced it today.
You're not a criminal, Teresa.
Yay!
I emailed it to her.
Jenny and Chris actually have volunteered to take some of the pamphlets to the events that they're going to this year.
Right now we have 5 events that we're going to be at. We're going to be in Cincinnati, Ohio, March 16th and 17th. We're going to be at the Lower Catskills Paracon. May 3rd and 4th, we're going to be at the Battleship with Chip Coffee on the 11th of May. We're going to be in Parafest 2013 in Pennsylvania, going back to Ohio for Creek Fest. We got so many places we're going, it's just too hard to list. I know we're going to be in Para Unity in Texas. I'm working on the Iowa Paracon in Farron, Iowa. So, I mean, we're going to be in so many places to get this awesome pamphlet out to these people. I mean, I'm thinking within this year alone, I know I'm probably going to hand it out to at least 5,000 to 6,000 people.
Great. Good. And I would suggest that any of you who are listening who realize what a serious and important issue this is, that if you're going somewhere that you print some out and you hand them out to.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really it is information that needs to get out there. And from what I understand, there are a lot of people who don't like the fact that the information is getting out there.
That is correct.
Yes.
So what's up with that? Because Elaine, you've told me that you've gotten some hate mail for this.
I did get some hate mail. I have had a couple of people contact me through Facebook, and they were like, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. And of course I'm like going, why? Because I didn't understand what they were coming from. They said, you're just trying to scare people off from investigating.
Oh my goodness.
And at first I was like, okay, really? And then I thought about it for a while. It's like, I am trying to scare people. If I get them when it's deemed necessary, or, you know, there's animals or insulation or stuff, they put on that mask, I'm happy with scaring them.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. So I wanted to go over a list. Actually, we have lots of lists to go over. First of all, I have a team, and we are going to investigate. Tell me my safety and first aid stuff I need.
Well, do you want your general health, or do you want your safety equipment?
I want everything I have to take with me to make sure so that my team is going to be safe.
And most of this will fit in one backpack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we have some general guidelines from stuff that you should have in your kit, in your first aid kit. But just remember this. Every team is going to need different things that another team would not need.
Okay.
So everybody's first aid kit is going to cover their team. Because I know in my team, nobody's allergic to bees, so we wouldn't have an EpiPen.
Right.
Everybody's first aid kit is going to be structured just a little bit differently. What Elaine has put in this pamphlet is the necessities that you must have in a general first aid kit.
Okay, so let's start with the bare necessities then.
A CPR mask, and that's because if you do run into trouble, you want to be able to give CPR. The disposable N95 respirator mask, an emergency blanket. And by emergency blanket, I'm talking about those little Mylar blankets.
Oh, they fold up to like the size of a sugar cube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If somebody is in shock, I have now learned, I used to think they were stupid and ridiculous, but I have been educated now. If somebody truly is in shock, if you wrap them even in one of those, you may save their life.
Wow, and I think they're groovy and very silver and shiny, so I like them.
Shiny.
Polysporin antibiotic cream. If somebody gets scratched or something like that during an investigation, even before the investigation, you should be putting on the polysporin or, you know, multi-triple biotic cream and covering it with a bandage, because even though we're talking about breathing stuff in, you could, anytime you have a cut, it's the same thing as breathing it in.
Right.
So you want to put that on before an investigation, but if something happens during the investigation, you want to do that. You want to have various band-aids, because we seem to bump around in the dark and seem to get hurt ourselves. So you want to be able to use your antibiotic cover. Bactine or calamine. This is if you get some kind of strange rash or insect bites, various sizes of ACE bandages if somebody sprains their ankle, sliding down steps or something. Benadryl, if somebody's starting to have a mild allergic reaction, if you have Benadryl oral tablets, they can take one of those and maybe so it doesn't get so bad. Exam gloves, I don't care if they're vinyl, whatever, as long as you
think. Just try to get the latex-free ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of people have latex allergies.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
Safety pins, because they're really darn handy if you have to make a splint for somebody. Scissors, and that's more for cutting tape and bandages and stuff to size. Tweezers for stinger and or tick removal. Trash bags, because, I shouldn't say this on the air, but they're good for making ice packs.
And if somebody's vomiting, they may not vomit all over your car on the way to the hospital.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, and people make garbage. You know, if you have four or five people together, yeah, there's going to be water bottles. I always carry garbage bags.
Well, we have a packet in, packet out, just like with hiking. That's our mm-hmm. investigation. So anything we bring in with us, we have to take out with us. So, right. Yeah.
People make trash.
Go ahead, Aline.
So the last couple of things was hand sanitizer. You should use this about once an hour during the investigation. So probably when you get home after you take a shower after the investigation, you're going to put one lotion on because you want to use one with alcohol in it. Carbon monoxide detector. The one home where I told you guys that the guys were in the basement, they yeah. had a carbon monoxide tester on the first floor, not in the basement next to the stove.
Well, so is there such a thing as a handheld carbon monoxide detector?
There's battery-operated ones you can buy at Home Depot. They run about $16, mm-hmm. and we have them in our kit.
And you just take it and make sure before you go. And how about, like, even in places that have propane or natural gas detectors would be good, too, for the same kind of reason. I learned that when propane leaks, what it does is it actually fills up a room from the bottom up because it's heavier mm-hmm. than air. And mm-hmm. so you walk into a room if that's has propane in it, and you'll suffocate. You'll drown in the propane.
If you get the right carbon monoxide detector, some of those do propane as well.
Yeah, ours is a multiple carbon monoxide natural yeah. gas, you know.
So, yeah, and they were fairly cheap. I bought it at Home Depot. Okay. And then masking tape or painter's tape. Painter's tape probably is preferred. And that's so if you're on the you got a room that you shouldn't go into, and this is based off, again, another story that we got in. You mask off the room like chest high, just run a piece of tape across of it, because if you get disoriented during the investigation, you might wander into some place you're not supposed to. And just sure. putting up the tape will stop somebody from doing that.
Well, and I've been a lot of places, the Klondike down in St. Helens comes to mind, where there are holes in the floors where you could go mm-hmm. through if it wasn't taped off. So it makes a lot of sense. So that brings to mind something that I think is really important, and I'm not an expert on this, but it's one of the reasons I have a big problem with investigating in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Safety. It's not necessary, and I think you have to do, if you're going to investigate in the dark for whatever reason, I think you have to do a walkthrough in the light.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So with that, let's do this. We need to, when we come back, I know, Elaine, you've done a lot of interviewing and talking to people, and you have stories about just about everything. So we're going to keep talking about safety in the paranormal when we come back with Shane Harris and Elaine Davison. Stick around. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
If you are a business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com. A proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the Z-Talk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ZTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. I am your host, Karen Frazier, sitting in for Rick Hale tonight, Teresa West, and we are talking to Shane Harris, who's the founder of the Sarah Harris Foundation, and Elaine Davison of Whoopi, and we are talking about paranormal safety. So welcome back, guys. Thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
So, Shane, I wanted to just have you tell us about Sarah.
Well, Sarah was a lovely person. She had a great personality. She was liked by everybody. We were married in 2004. We have two great kids. Chloe's 9 and Justin's 19. Her love for the paranormal was like nothing that I have ever imagined. Instead of going out to movies or dinner, we went to investigations. That was our time for us. That was our bonding time, stuff like that. She was a mother. She was a wife. She just, if you knew my wife, Sarah, you would understand how she was. She'd give you the shirt off her back. She'd do anything for you. And for this tragedy to happen, it's one of these things that I don't wish this upon my worst enemies. I really don't even have any enemies. But for this to happen to Sarah, should not have happened. She was 36 years old. She still had a long life to live. And I've been through what if this and what if we did this differently or what if we hadn't done this. You know, we did. And what I want to do is I want to get it out there to anybody and everybody who will listen that there are real dangers out there. Not just spiritually, but physically. And I do this. This is my grieving process. I've cried. I've wept. There's been sleepless and restless nights for me and for my daughter and son. I do this is my way of keeping my wife alive in me. This is why I do this. If you would just take 3 minutes of your time and read her story, what she endured for 28 days, to be in a hospital, in a coma, hooked to machines, because of something that she loved to do. And just read her story. Because it will really open your eyes and it will really make you think, this could be my wife, this could be my husband, this could be my son or daughter. You know, she passed away at 12:26 p.m. That time will always be embedded in my head.
Go ahead.
I don't want this to happen to anybody. This is something that you need to take serious. Because if you don't take it serious, you could wind up dead. I hate to be blunt, but you could die. Sorry.
It's okay. It's real and it's your life. And I was telling you off the air, but I'll tell you again, I really admire that you've taken something that is such a huge personal tragedy and turned it into a positive driving force in your life. I think that speaks volumes about who you are as a person, and I think it speaks volumes about your wife.
Thank you. It's very hard to do what I do, but this is my life's mission, is to do this. Like Elaine said, if I save one person's life, I'm happy.
Well, you are saving people's lives. So where can people go to read her story?
You go to SarahHarrisFoundation.org. You can go to the Facebook page. It's www.facebook.com/SH Foundation. Or you can just simply type in Sarah Harris Foundation up in the search bar. And you can read it. It's only like a little 4 paragraphs long. But if you would just take time and just read it, because I lived it. I lived this 28 days. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Just to see her laying there in that hospital bed, fighting for her life. She fought all the way to the time that she passed away, because she was a fighter. And the Saturday, on the 24th, she woke up, and I was holding her hand, and we had a conversation. I asked her if she could understand me to squeeze my hand, and she squeezed my hand. And I asked her, she accepted Jesus Christ as her personal Lord and Savior. She squeezed my hand. And I asked her if she repented of all of her sins, knowing and unknowing. She squeezed my hand again. And tears fell from her eyes. And I told her that I loved her with all my heart, and that I would be here every day. And she squeezed my hand again. And she went back to sleep. That was the last conversation I had with her.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I know it can't be any easier to talk about now than it was when you went through it. So, Elaine, I wanted to shift gears to you, if you're ready.
Okay, so you can dry your eyes.
That's right. So you've been talking with Shane, of course, as you've researched your pamphlet, and you tell us about the process of how you went about gathering the information for your safety pamphlet.
Well, like I said earlier, it started because my team had some really scary investigations, and we didn't want to be sick. My friend Dr. Connie, I went to her and was getting some advice, and she says, you know, somebody should really write this down. And we talked about, well, if we write a pamphlet, how are we going to get the information? Because, you know, it would be meaningless to go get information on stuff people weren't getting sick with. And so she volunteered to send to her alumni association, which was Harvard Medical Alumni and Stanford Medical Alumni. She did a residency at Stanford. Send a blanket email that we drafted, basically saying, hey, I'm helping somebody that's a paranormal investigator write a pamphlet. Do you have your stories? Can you send us something? So we know we're touching on the right things to keep these people safe. And the stories came. We got over 140 of them. Some doctors... It was kind of funny because every one of them came with a disclaimer. The disclaimer said, for most of them, going, unless it was an immediate accident, we can't be sure that they got these illnesses at an investigation. Like histoplasmosis was one that came up several times. What they can prove is the only known exposure was the investigation. So, you know, the doctors were very careful in how they worded things.
But we took the stories and we put them into different piles. The first pile was what we called the Darwin Awards. My pamphlet really doesn't cover those. We find creative ways to hurt ourselves.
So the Darwin Awards are the people who did something by their own stupidity and removed themselves from the gene pool, correct?
That is them.
Okay.
The guy that crawled out on the roof and fell off of it because there was a sheet of ice on the roof. Yeah, don't crawl. It's common sense should have prevented him. So those guys are out of it. Then we had the viral, bacterial, and fungus type stuff, and those each got a separate pile. And believe it or not, most of what we got was in the viral, bacterial, and fungus. And then we had a miscellaneous other pile, the story about the asbestos and the CO went to other. They were important stories to tell, but kind of hard to classify them. So we sorted those out. Then I took a long look at how did they get sick. And so we put the top ones in the pamphlet and the ones that people were more likely to get than others. And some of them, it was like, well, we've got three different types of bacteria. They're so similar. They've all got the same protections. So otherwise, I could have written about a 500-page book.
Wow.
So, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And so I want to, let's start with the infections. The viral, fungal, and bacterial, is that what you were calling it?
Yes.
So scare the crap out of us, what's out there?
One of the big ones, and since Karen, you and I are both in the Pacific Northwest right now, is rat bite fever.
Rat bite fever.
Yes. And when I was doing this, I was talking with the CDC. Matters of fact, a doctor from the CDC basically gave me the Sarah Harris story. Literally, it mirrors what Shane just told you almost down to the wire. He didn't say what hospital, he didn't say where, he just gave the story. I also contacted the health departments for Oregon and Washington and a few others. Rat bite fever is very prominent this year, especially up in Washington.
Great.
You can get it from basically being in an area, eating, breathing, drinking stuff that has been contaminated. If you're in an area with a water bottle, and you're kicking up dust, and that dust is on the water bottle, you take off the top and take a drink, you could be ingesting the rat feces.
Oh.
Sorry, people. You didn't want that visual, but I'm sorry. And you can get two different types of it. And one of them is strep-based. One's, I can never say that word, spirillia-based.
Spirillia, yeah.
Yeah, those two types of infections. You know, simple antibiotics will cure this, but you don't
even...
How
do you prevent it?
How do you prevent it? You wear a dust mask. You use a lot of... Just the hand sanitizers will denaturalize the feces and break down the protein so you won't get sick. So, you know, constantly using that, using the face mask will prevent you from getting it. Another big one that's coming around lately, believe it or not, is histoplasmosis. This is very common. It's actually... when an animal comes into a dry home, like under a house, up in an attic, they do their business and leave behind their animal waste. Fungus grows on them almost immediately within 3 days. That fungus out in nature would be eaten up by microorganisms. Unfortunately, in your attic, it's not eaten by those microorganisms. And you go upstairs, you kick that stuff around, you breathe it in, it gets in your lungs, it'll start growing in your lungs.
Ick.
Again, yeah. Antifungal medicines will cure it, but you know, that's a big one that people have gotten quite a bit. I think there was like 12 or 13 cases of histoplasmosis that were paranormal investigators. Now, again, the doctors say, well, we can't be 100% sure, but she went to this house and... So, you know, I love their disclaimers. It's like, you know, that they wanted to say, we're sure she got it here. We just can't prove it. One of the more obscure ones that somebody got was, and that one leaped me at, was epidemic typhus.
What was it? I'm sorry, you blinked out.
Oh, epidemic typhus. And that is a bacterial infection. It comes from lice. You know, those nice little head lice that your kids will bring home to you. And a team went in, they did an investigation in a house. And I did talk to one of the team members that got this. Two members got head lice after this investigation.
Ugh.
Only one got epidemic typhus. I'm now going to be really afraid of children the rest of my life.
So should you shave your head when you leave a house then? I mean, you know.
Pretty much you can't present this. You know, it's like... I was told the chances of you getting it were very slim. But it happened, so it did make the pamphlet. If you did get epidemic typhus from lice, which now I'm terrified of children, you do. It does require hospitalization, and it's pretty serious because you can get. I think he said it was encephalitis. Your brain starts to swell if you don't get it cured quick enough. So you know. Another one was leptospirosis. It's one of those things that basically about 4 to 2 weeks after an investigation, you might get fever, headache, chills. It doesn't really necessarily cause an infection of your lungs. A lot of these do. Leptospirosis doesn't. It really makes you wop and sick. Can start to shut down your kidneys if it's left untreated, but usually... I was told that the vomiting, muscle aches, and chills were so severe they will drive a person to the hospital. So,
great.
Now that you're terrified.
That's right. So
let's go on a ghost hunt.
I'm assuming that what we do is we go in a plastic bubble and observe from inside of that.
No.
Yeah.
We go in with disinfectant, spray down the whole place.
Quarantine the whole place.
That's right.
One of the main things I think is that what they tell you with flu and colds, keep your hands away from your face.
Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
Very important.
Your hands transfer everything.
You go walking up at Wellington, Karen, and go to sit down there in the little overlook area and put your hand down on the handrail and then rub your nose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I do not. I actually take hand sanitizer with me and wipes.
Well, you know, I'm just as an example, because
sure.
I've seen pictures of that. So,
you've seen pictures of me wiping my nose after touching the handrail?
Sitting on the little overlook.
Oh, well, that you have seen, yes, that's true.
That I'm just, you know, I'm just saying, you walk down through
there. Well, you know, actually, I lick the handrail. Let's be real about it.
Oh, Lordy, see why I don't talk around you?
Sorry.
No,
we don't know where other people's hands have been.
Right.
We'll just leave it at that.
And you don't know what's been on other people's counters.
Right.
Okay, so hand washing, hand sanitizer, masks, and how about after the investigation, Elaine?
You need to go home. As soon as you get home, remove the clothes you were wearing, get them out of your living area, and take a shower. Because you don't know what clothes you, or fungus or bacteria you brought home on your clothes. So you want to get them out of the area and take a shower as soon as you get home.
You also want to protect your family.
That's right.
Yep. So because if you don't take a shower and you get in the bed, that's where you sleep.
Yep. Great example, I live near the Alcoa plants, the aluminum plants. I don't know if it's current any longer. There was a lawsuit where the gentlemen would come home from work at the plants where they had asbestos, and they would hang their clothes up or, you know, leave their clothes somewhere. There's a, this man's daughter died from mesothelioma just from being exposed to his clothing when he came home from work. So it's, that's, yeah, take your clothes off and wash them. It's the things that hang on that you don't even think about.
So how do you strike a balance between not being a complete terrified germaphobe and being smart?
You take safety precautions. You take it seriously. At the front of my pamphlet, I have some general guidelines for staying healthy. Number one is if you've got a cold or, you know, you're not feeling well, don't go on the investigation. Because, number one, you don't want to get the rest of your team sick. And the other reason why you don't want to go is because your immune system is already compromised. So if bacterial, viral, whatever does happen to get into your system, it's got a good foothold. One of the other things is to drink lots of water on your investigation.
Damn, I thought you were going to say whiskey.
I know.
Probably kill everything.
Well, I mean, how many people have heard over the term paranormal hangover?
I get had paranormal hangovers.
Drink water.
Let's talk about that, because this is interesting, because one of the first things you did when you found out about the paranormal hangover was you told me about it, because I get them all the time.
I know. One of the doctors that responded back, and this is another other pile story, obviously, he goes, well, I had this patient, and she would get these really bad headaches, etc., after investigating, and she'd get migraines.
That's what I get. Yep.
She would go on an investigation. The next day, she'd have a migraine.
Yep.
So they were trying to figure out what it was, and, you know, why was she getting these? So he finally decided to have her do some simple tests. Before the investigation, she went in and got her blood drawn. They live in a metropolitan area with a 24-hour urgent care type thing. As soon as the investigation was over with, she was to go get her blood drawn again. And then the next morning after she woke up, she was to get her blood drawn again. Before the investigation, her cortisol level, which is also the hormone that supposedly makes you fat.
Yeah, it's your stress hormones.
It is the stress hormones. Thyroid, your adrenal glands, all of those.
It's your fight or flight hormones. It's what makes you either stand and fight or run like hell.
Right.
Yeah.
So the before the investigation, her cortisol levels were normal. Not a problem. One immediately following the investigation was four times higher than normal because she had been there for like several hours. And even though it's stress, I mean, you know, you're not necessarily running down the hall screaming to get away from a ghost.
Well, speak for yourself. That's how I investigate.
Yeah.
Karen is friends from bats.
Yeah, I do.
I've investigated with her. We find things in strange corner rooms.
That's a different show altogether.
Yes, but
that's the when ghosts. When ghosts have sex.
Anyway, but they went ahead and they drew her blood. It was high, extremely high. And then the next day, it still hadn't gotten back down to normal. And so basically what was happening is she was ODing on her own cortisol. Well, he started having her drink about 4 to 6 ounces every hour she was investigating, and that seems to be about right to keep basically flushing out the cortisol while you're investigating.
Hmm.
So,
and you know, that's not a whole lot of water. It's less than a cup.
It's a 20-ounce bottle on a 5-hour investigation.
Yeah.
You're right. I can do that.
You can do that.
Well, maybe I actually use a Camelback.
Okay.
The, you know, the water bladder backpacks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
That's one.
That's really interesting. And it also makes you wonder, because cortisol is actually the hormone that makes you fat.
Uh-huh.
So if you have elevated cortisol, and what can happen with cortisol, because I write about stuff like this, this is part of my real job. What can happen with cortisol is when your adrenal glands are constantly under a little bit of stress, and we're all under constantly a little bit of stress. Yeah, we live in a very stressful world. With spurts of bigger stress, your adrenal glands can actually kind of just poop out and either produce cortisol all the time, which means
not at all,
or stop producing it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So cortisol is interesting stuff, and it plays a role in ghost hunting. Even if you are one of the calmest paranormal investigators ever, you're still there's stress involved with paying attention and watching and all of the things that you need to do. And so, yeah, it makes total sense to me.
And for the most part, you're in a completely foreign environment in the dark.
Well, but you don't have to be in the dark.
You don't have to be in the dark, no, but, you know, most of the time.
Well, that's how they do it on TV.
The location that we were at, it wasn't a foreign location for us. We'd actually been there a couple times prior. So we knew the layout of the house, and, you know, we like I said, we'd been there before. So even though you've been someplace before, you still need to take precautions, because the more you go to a place, the more you feel comfortable.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, complacency kills.
Yes.
Literally, it does.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think that we're really talking about worst-case scenarios for a very important reason. We're talking about those because it can happen, and you need to not be cavalier about it. At the same time, you shouldn't be absolutely certain that every time you investigate, you're going to come home and die. You know, so there's a balance there. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so we talked about the diseases. We talked about the animals. Wasn't there another section too, Elaine? Or is that just injuries?
Well, there's the environmental dangers.
Environmental. Okay, yeah.
Yes. People dangers was one of the things. And
like crazy people?
Well, yeah, crazy. What happened to this poor person? And the doctor told the story to us. I didn't contact this person, but yeah, it was an interesting one. Two investigators had gone to a home. The man let him in. They had actually been contacted by the woman of the home. They go in, went to use the restroom. Well, the wife forgot that she had called the paranormal investigators to come. And I think she was 2 bricks short of a load, because apparently she thought every woman that talked to her husband was having an affair.
Oh, no.
So she is like coming home. She walks in and she attacked the investigator. And you know, the doctor got to listen to this woman tell the whole thing, to the police. And while she was off getting x-rays, he said he Googled the lady's name because he'd overheard, and apparently all sorts of stuff came up about her being in bar fights and this and that.
And so a little bit of research about your client is a good idea.
Yeah. You know, yeah. You'd have really thought twice about going to that house if you'd found out the woman was like psycho crazy first. Electrical hazards. Sarah was not the only investigator to die last year.
No, she was not.
Was not. One of the other ones that passed away last year was due to electrocution. 2 people got electrocuted. I did talk to the guy that survived. I obviously did not talk to the one that did not, but my understanding is in both situations were very similar. They were in an area. One touched a heating vent. The other one grabbed a hold of a metal pipe.
They were grounded.
They were in old homes with knob and two wiring.
Oh.
And obviously the knob had fallen off and was in contact with the metal in both cases.
Wow.
EMF, you know, get out the K2 meter type person anyway. I'm like old school, like my compass better. But reality is get that this is one time you should get it out and make sure that, you know, okay, yeah, I can eat now. Mold is actually, you know, mold is everywhere. If you were to do an air sample,
it is on my bread in the cabinet right now.
It is. If you were to do an air sample test in your home, the chances of you finding mold in there are like almost a certainty.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's tens of thousands of different types of mold. Let's face it, penicillin's a mold. So it really all depends on what the mold you're exposed to. So just because there's mold in the house doesn't mean you're all going to get sick, but all mold can irritate when it's breathing. So I'm one to go ahead and say, put on the mask. If you see something, put on the mask. Mm-hmm. And mildew acts pretty much the same as mold. I think we've covered everything else, kind of, I guess, and by Gimini. The only thing we haven't really talked about is the mental health part of the pamphlet.
You want to talk about mental health?
Well, we didn't touch on the crazy people that we might come in contact as in the way of clients.
Although there are some of those.
Yes, yeah.
Well, let's be honest, there is a certain subset of people drawn to the paranormal who might have some issues.
Yes. And there's two types that when we were doing research, and I think I probably read maybe 30 different, very dry, boring, hard to read studies. And believe it or not, the mental health professionals have been studying people that are in this field. I was very surprised to find that out. But they did find a small subset of people. One has histrionic personality disorder.
HPD.
Yes, that one.
I know a few of them.
I think I do too.
Yeah. We probably know the same ones.
It's possible. Munchausen falls into
no, I'm sorry. Go on.
Munchausen falls into this, and these are people that probably aren't a huge danger, but they got to do things to draw attention.
Oh, the Munchausen syndrome. Those are the people who make themselves ill or hurt themselves or that type of thing for attention.
Yeah.
Or Munchausen by proxy, where they do that to other people.
Usually, they usually do that to their children.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what they'll do is when they join a paranormal team, first they seem normal, but and then they thrive on, listen to this EVP. And if you go, well, I'm really not thinking that's an EVP, they may start engaging in more and more behaviors that it has been believed is potential. Some people have actually set up scenarios where their team members almost got hurt so they could save them, kind of type situation. So you do have to look out for those. Another type of problem that tends to happen is intrusive obsession disorder. And that's kind of where a person gets involved in the paranormal and they start, everything is around the paranormal. They lose their friends. It's kind of like an alcoholic, but their alcohol of choice is paranormal, where everything, only thing that matters to them is the next EVP, the next this. People have been known to lose their jobs.
It's like alcohol. Yeah, you're right. It's like an addiction.
Yeah, and I don't know why it's called that. They should just call it addiction.
Paradiction.
Yes, that has been happening. There's not a lot, but it's just something you might want to be aware of. People that have this obsession disorder really do need counseling. Actually, both of them need counseling. Sure. Not much we personally can do to help them except try to get them to get the help they need.
Right. So screen your team members.
Mm-hmm.
Be aware of potential issues that might be involved psychologically with people in the paranormal. And if there's something that comes up that's a red flag, then maybe you need to take action of some kind.
Yep.
What?
I said yes.
Oh, I thought you said no. I was going to say so. Well, just let them be like the sleeper cell until they explode.
just run off to the side of the road.
I'm thinking, oh my God, she just told me no. What?
Just let them go. That's a bad word.
Let them go and film them. Put it on your YouTube channel. You know. That's what you do.
But okay. Do it from your plastic bubble.
All right. So we're about to the time where we need to start wrapping up. So I want to give you both the opportunity to get out any information you want. Websites, where people can go to find stuff. Shane, we'll start with you.
Okay. We have a Facebook page. It's www.facebook.com// I can't remember which one it is. I always get it confused. SH Foundation. That's our Facebook page. Go out there. Give us a like. You can read on our events where we're going to be at. If we're going to be in your area, stop by and see us. Introduce ourselves. We love to meet people. You can always go to SarahHarrisFoundation.org. It has all our contact information, how to get a hold of me anytime, day or night. That's my cell phone number. You can call me. I will answer.
Brave man putting your cell phone number on the internet.
That is my cell phone number. My email address is there. My co-founder, her email address is there. She's in Texas. So you can get a hold of her or me, either or. We got a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to be on other radio shows. Like I said before, we're going to the Sedansville Rectory in March. We got the Lower Catskills in May. We got the Battleship May 11th. We got Creep Fest coming up. We got the Iowa Paracon. We got Parafest 2013 in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I've got like four radio shows coming up that we're doing. Elaine's getting me these pamphlets. We're going to get it out there on the website so you can pull it up on like a PDF file and download it straight to your laptop and print it out or however. Get on our page, like our page. That is the best and easiest way to stay up to what we are doing, where we are going, how, you know, this foundation is doing. If you want to make donations, I don't really like asking for money. That's not my type of person, but you know, I fund this out of my pocket. Everything that I do comes out of my pocket. And I'm just a single father. So if you want to make donations, SarahHarrisFoundation@yahoo.com. That is, I have a PayPal account set up. So if you want to make donations, you can do that there. Also on the website, the .org website on how to make donations. And whatever is donated will help save somebody's life because that's what this foundation is trying and is doing, getting the word out there so people can be safe so they don't end up like my wife.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
I just want to say one more thing.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me on your show. Elaine, I've told you time and time again, thank you for letting me distribute your pamphlet, letting me get it out there for people, and I am truly blessed to have y'all support, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Shane. So, Elaine, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. This pamphlet, anybody wants them, get a hold of Shane, and we'll make sure you get them. Either Shane or I will make sure you get them. And
give them out to people.
And yes, I will be at the Oregon Ghost Conference coming up in March. I will have safety pamphlets. People can stop by the Whoopee table, which is Western Oregon Organization of Paranormal Investigators, and grab one. We're actually going to have a fully stocked paranormal safety kit on our table. So please stop by, see that it's really not that hard to put one together. Again, get a hold of Shane's website at sarahharrisfoundation.org, and there's a tab in there for safety. All the information that's in the pamphlet is right there on the website as well.
So. All right. Thank you, Elaine and Shane. I think that it's you guys have done a great service by coming here, and I hope any of you who are listening, either live or later when this is in podcast, that you'll get that pamphlet, that you'll print out copies for yourself, print out copies for your team, and that you'll get the word out to other people. This is really important. This isn't a scare tactic. We're not trying to regulate the field of paranormal investigation or anything else. All we're trying to do is make people aware that they be safe so that somebody doesn't lose their husband or their wife or their son or their daughter again. So, Teresa.
Yeah.
Thanks for being the new and improved Rick Hale.
Well, thank you so very much for asking me to be on the show. Shane, Elaine, it has been an absolute pleasure. It's such a moving story, and it's so wonderful that someone is stepping forward just to spread a little common sense and a little knowledge.
That's right. And Cheryl?
Yes.
Are we going to be printing the pamphlet and Sarah's story in, what, March?
Yes. Yes, we're going to print that as a special report in our March issue, which will go online March 1st.
You know, the other thing is maybe it might not be a bad idea to make that available for download, the pamphlet, available for download to anybody.
Yes.
On the Paranormal Underground website. And I could also see about doing it on our team website as well. And that may be something that teams listening can do. Get the pamphlet, get the PDF of the pamphlet, and put it on your website for download.
I will do that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, next week we have, you already said, but I forgot.
Next week, and also I want to thank Shane, and I want to thank Elaine for talking about this, and it's an important subject that, you know, we just don't think of. I don't think of it, and so I really want to thank you guys for stepping it up and helping the paranormal community in this way. It's really a big deal, and it's saving lives, and I think that, you know, that's a huge thing. So thank you both.
Absolutely. I agree. Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Next week, we're going to talk with Deb Lance, a psychic medium, paranormal investigator, and author of True Hauntings.
Awesome. And, can I be Rick next week, too?
Maybe.
Hey,
there's a possibility.
It's possible.
That we'll have to see how Rick does. Apparently, Rick, he's had a little...
I think
computer.
His computer went boom.
Computer. So, I was just going to say a little computer incident, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, so...
There's been
there's
an
hope.
Incident. There's
I mean,
been a death
sorry,
in
Rick.
Rick's house as well. It's his computer.
Yeah.
And
The Rick Hale incident.
The Rick Hale incident, that's right.
So yeah, join us next week.
The noodle
it's
incident
be a good
in Calvin and Hobbes. Anyway.
What was that?
The noodle incident in Calvin. If you ever read Calvin and Hobbes, they always talk about the noodle incident,
that,
but they never say what it is.
That was
you
awesome.
In my brain, I was just thinking of the book that I've got called Scientific Progress Goes Boink.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they talk about the noodle incident in there. Anyway, so, and then... February 14th, So Jacked, Stanton T. Friedman, everybody.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we'll talk UFOs
so
and all that good
great.
Stuff. Yeah. So, and if you want a little preview of the February issue, which now I'm learning it might not go online tomorrow. It might be the next day because our website might be.
I jinxed it.
You did.
Promise.
You know why? Because our website might be undergoing some maintenance tomorrow. I just found out. So it may or may not be there tomorrow, but it will be there this weekend or else. But we have some good stories, some good articles. We have a story on the ghosts of six celebrated Hollywood actresses. We have a story called The Haunting at Farrar School. Did I say that right? I hope I did. We have an article on a cryptid called the Luska or Luska. And Chad wrote an article on the Diet Love Pass incident, which is really interesting because there are theories that, you know, extraterrestrials were involved, but there's some other theories too, which he examines, which are a little more natural.
Chad likes those ETs. That's all
I can say. He does. So, oh, and we have part two of Dr. Barry Taft's article, Hazardous Haunting.
Hey. Ooh, love Barry Taft.
Yeah, so read that. It's a good one. Oh my, there's so many. Why do demons attack certain people? We've got that article in there. We've got William Becker. We've got, he wrote about remote viewing and uninvited visits from the paranormal. Very interesting one. Jackie Chin wrote about awakening the process of becoming psychic, which from what I hear is happening more often, or maybe people are just talking about it more.
Okay.
So there's so much content here. We've got, about 76 pages in this issue. We've got
76 pages of paranormal goodness you can eat with a spoon.
Yeah. There's articles on crystals. There's an article on love magic.
I need me some of that.
Yeah, there's personal experiences.
Put on a Barry. Is it like on a Barry White CD?
Yeah. I could go on and on. I'm going to stop. But yeah, you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy the issue. I know it.
All right, very good.
So Karen, wait. I left out one of the most fun articles in the whole issue.
Oh. The top 10 cryptids I just made up right now.
That's the one, and Karen wrote it.
Or maybe I didn't.
Or did she?
Or did I? Maybe they're real. You'll just have to see.
Yeah.
You can bet it features bats and outhouses.
Yep. You mentioned bats twice in your top 10 list, so.
Did I really?
You did.
That's because I'm terrified of freaking bats.
Yeah, so good article right there. Nice,
well,
fun article.
And from what we've heard today, with good reason.
Yes.
Yes. So, and therefore, look at what I just did. I segued, I tied it all together with a neat shiny bow. So let's do this. Stick around for Fox City's Paranormal coming up next. And next week, we will be back with Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. Everybody, have a great week. We'll talk at you next week. Good night.
Bye, guys. Bye, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.
It starts with an itch and a tingle, and then it builds and expands. And suddenly, all at once, my legs won't let me stand.